Welcome to I Caught It on Audio. This is Water Cooler Chat episode 32. Doom 2.
Welcome to I Caught It on Audio. Today we're going to gather around the water cooler and have a chat about the movie Dune 2. We just recently, on our book club podcast, went through the entire Dune book. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. And Dune 2 is currently in the theaters. So we thought we'd watch that and see how it plays out as a movie and how it compares to the book and what our general thoughts on it are. So Matt, why don't you give us a summary of what happened in the movie here?
Okay, we pick up pretty much right after the first movie, and we're still moving Jameis's body, and they're attacked, and they take out they're Arrakian soldiers, right? We're not dealing with Sardaukar.
They're Harkonnens.
Harkonnens.
Yeah. Yep, Harkonnen.
Okay, so they take out the Harkonnen soldiers, and then they get the body back to wherever their stronghold is and have some ritual with it. And Jessica drinks the water of life and becomes their reverend mother. And it affects her unborn kid, who will coincidentally never be born. That's my working theory now.
Oh.
that kid just lives in that tummy now.
Yeah.
And, okay, where we go from here? We get into a lot of fighting. It's just disrupting spice production. A lot of fighting. Raban gets ticked off and blows up one of the strongholds. We go south. Paul becomes more entrenched in the Fremen way of life and learns to ride the sandworms. Then we go south, and Paul talks to the council and establishes himself as the Messiah. Then we go north and have a big fight, lure the emperor there. Somewhere in there, Gurney Haddock reveals that he knows where the Atreides nukes are.
The family atomics.
Yeah. The ugly lump of a man, Gurney Haddock, comes and reveals the location of the family atomics.
And we've picked him up. He was with some group of people.
Smugglers.
Scavenging,
yes.
Smuggling. Yeah.
Yep.
And then we get him back. Then he reveals the atomics. Once the emperor is there, we get another big, what's his name? Fade Rautha gets appointed to the Duke or Baron, whatever title is over Arrakis, over Raban.
And we get the great gladiator scene.
The gladiator scene happens before that, which was stunning to look at.
Yeah.
And quite a bit different than the book. We get the big final scene. Paul launches the nukes, destroys the wall so that the Fremen can come in, and they attack from three sides. They overwhelm the Emperor's forces and come in. The Emperor appoints Fade Rautha to be his guy in a one-on-one fight. There's a really cool fight scene between Paul and Fade Rautha. Paul wins, but is injured, becomes betrothed to the Emperor's daughter, and as long as he lets the emperor live. All the other houses are choosing not to accept Paul's ascension. So the Fremen are headed out to fight the other houses in the Great Jihad.
You didn't once mention Chaney's name, which I think is appropriate because she got...
She got sidelined hard.
Sidelined so bad in this, which is too bad. I mean, the things she was in, she was really good. I thought they did her character wasn't particularly big in the book either. It was more of a plot device. And I thought they did a great job making her useful when they did. But man, they could have done more with her character.
They really could have, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't get that impression because they did do more in the movie than the book. I mean, of course they could have done more, but I didn't really think of it that way. They spent more time on the love story than they do in the book because Frank Herbert can't write actual romance. He just says, now we're together. And then they give her, and one of the interesting changes from the book, they eliminate a lot of the, did Jessica like betray, you know, people, political like maneuvering and yes. all that. And they replace it with two factions among the Fremen, those that believe in the prophecies, especially from the south. Mm-hmm. And then the younger, you know, northern people, especially who who are like, no, you know, we that's all made up, you know? And right. So she kind of is a big leader, at least a spokesperson in, for the movie's purposes, for the he's not a messiah or a leader or the, you know, the Mahdi that that the Southerners all believe that he is. So I think they gave her a lot to do. And they also gave her, you know, like a big moment at the end of the movie where in the book, Paul's like, don't worry, I'm going to marry her for political reasons. I'll never touch her. It's you that I love. You'll be mm-hmm. by my side. You know, she and Jessica both say, hey, you know, we're the important people. We are the we're the mistresses, but we are the, you know, the consorts. We're the important ones that history will remember. In the movie, they did a smart thing, which is they left it open ended, like Paul had betrayed her right. for the princess and then she just leaves. And so, of course, since they're planning on making a third one, I'm sure based on all the money that was made by this one, that sets up well for the next movie. So I thought she got a lot to do, relatively speaking, compared to the book. They could have done more, I suppose, but I thought they expanded her character quite nicely.
I did like the ending with her like leaving.
Yeah, I thought that was really good too.
That was better than the book, I thought.
Yeah, the book is so matter of fact about a lot of these moments. Like there's just not that much there'll be tension for a long time and then like he'll just be like, and then this happened and that was that, and on we move, you know. And
yeah,
the movie did a much did more movie-ish stuff of you know, creating some suspense and making you wonder and then paying it off. Any other changes you guys noticed that you liked or disliked?
Well, they completely took Howard out, like you mentioned, with the whole and the story of Jessica, whether she was the one who betrayed right. Duke Leto. They completely removed that entire dynamic.
I believe they shot stuff with him, but then they cut it from the final cut of the yeah. movie.
And I think it made the story cleaner, which yeah. I appreciated, because they were able to bring the tension that the story needed without that aspect of it. So I didn't mind that missing. Though I did want to see more of Howard.
Yeah, I like the actor and I thought mm-hmm. he was a really cool character, but you're right. I think it was already pushing 3 hours. It's okay to simplify. There was so much to get through as it was.
Yeah. Speaking of simplifying, I really liked the Emperor turning on the Baron and smashing the little levitation suit.
The suspensors.
Yeah. I liked that dynamic. I thought it was very fitting. Like he didn't kill the Baron, but he immobilized him. They really upped the Emperor's presence in this. He yep. didn't have a ton of presence in the book.
Well, Dave, what did you think of Christopher Walken as the Emperor?
I thought he was great, but I'm kind of in love with Christopher Walken, so it's it's hard for me to not think he's great. So I don't know if that's tainted or not, but I thought he was powerful and but extremely vulnerable all at the same time, if that makes sense. Like he definitely had a commanding presence, but you knew he felt like he was on a razor's edge and he could lose his power at a moment's notice, especially in this specific scenario. So I thought that was really cool. What did you think?
I was not as big of a fan. I love Walken, but I thought it was the weirdest casting in the whole movie. He's just, first of all, he's such a distinctive person. I mean, yeah. I know that this is stacked with just famous, distinctive actors and actresses, but he's a very specific type. And he was much older and frailer than the Emperor as we read him in the book. I mean, maybe not in age and actual numbers, but in sort of vitality. I didn't hate it, but I thought it was strange. Zach, what did you think of it?
I wanted more cowbell. What it really came down to. He was fine. I thought he was both powerful and vulnerable at the same time, which is kind of it's a good way to go with the Emperor. But I do hear what you're saying, which is like, you know, Christopher Walken is Christopher Walken, and so it's kind of hard to place him into this role and sort of get out of it what you need from the character when it just feels like Christopher Walken doing Christopher Walken things, and you know, everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fine. And I did really like the dynamic between him and Florence Pugh, the mm-hmm. his daughter. And I really wish she would have gotten more time. It's one of those things where I get that they have to kind of condense things and bring things down. But for this type of thing, I really wish it could have actually been more of like a HBO Max series or something like that, where they really pumped a lot of money into it and they could do all of it, you know, the way that I wanted it done. Matt, what did you think about Christopher Walken?
At first I thought, oh, he's just kind of, you know, he's not doing much. He's relying a lot on his daughter's advice, and he's not doing a ton. He didn't seem very powerful or even active in his empire until he got to Arrakis, and then he had a commanding presence. I liked him. I don't know that I would have cast him as the Emperor, but I liked it.
Just to jump in on the Florence Pugh part of it, she did a really great job in a very small role, which was mostly explaining stuff or like moving the plot forward by telling the audience what was going on. She should have a much bigger role in the next movie. So I think that's, she was underutilized in this movie, but it makes sense considering this is more of a setup for the next film. And the same goes for the very brief Anya Taylor-Joy moment where we see Aaliyah in the future, I think, if I read that right. And she should obviously be, she's another star. So she'll be, I think, a big presence in Dune Messiah, if and when we get that.
No, that kid's never being born.
I know you said that, Matt. Yeah.
So the Aaliyah character is my biggest complaint with this, just because I wanted so much for her to be there and to,
to kill the Baron.
Kill the Baron.
My favorite scene. Dang it. But yeah, I understand why they didn't. But
it's not my favorite scene, but it is such a good scene, and it would have played out so well on the screen in this series.
It would have been
tricky
having a 3-year-old go and kill the Baron. So honestly,
you can take some liberties with that. Like I was perfectly okay when they were talking about Anya Taylor-Joy joining the cast, and they're like, who could that be? And it's like, I know who that is. I'm perfectly okay with them just saying that she's 2 years old, but she's the embodiment of Anya Taylor-Joy. Like, who cares? You know, if you're going to take liberties in ways that make it more interesting and fun. Like, she's a freak of nature. She's 2 years old. She's already like a full grown human. She doesn't have to be the, you know, quote unquote, are you a midget that the Baron was had saw. They don't have to go that route. But they could have at least had her do the thing she was supposed to do, and maybe even have like a little scene where she's telling her mom that that everybody thinks she's a freak because she's 2 years old, but she's a full grown woman.
Yeah,
why would she be full grown?
Why wouldn't she be full grown? I mean, the Water of Life does all kinds of crazy stuff to people. It's sci-fi, guys. Like, who cares? You know.
I thought they handled the killing of the Baron very well. I really liked the way they did that.
See, I don't, because I think that puts Paul in this position where he's this vengeful, you know, douchebag. Well,
that is exactly
Paul's
right.
Not the hero.
Yeah, I think I thought
he doesn't need to be the hero, but I don't need him to be a vengeful douchebag either.
Well, I see what you're saying, Zach, but I kind of agree with Dave. What I don't think they quite did well enough in the movie, in the book, it was more like he was and they kind of hint at this. He's trying to avoid death and the jihad and, you know, millions, you know, perishing across the, you know, the known universe. He's trying to avoid that the whole time in the book. He's talking about it. And then in the book, he says to himself, it's not avoidable. It must happen. It has to happen, and then maybe eventually we can remake the world, you know, in the long run. In the movie, he's like, no, I don't want to go south, because then they're all gonna, you know, worship me, and then I'll become the thing, you know, that I don't want to be, and death will happen. And they didn't really, I don't think they really emphasized like a moment's decision of, yes, I'm going to embrace this death. It's like they didn't do anything with that, but I thought they could have done more. You know, like he sends out the Fremen to, you know, hop in their spaceships and go kill everybody. But I don't know. I could have used a more obvious moment, you know, to sort of dictate, okay, I've decided either this must happen or I want this to happen. But they did give some nice darkness to the character by having him kill his grandfather. So I know what you're saying, Zach, but I think it actually served the story well. And if that wasn't there, then he would come off like the good guy.
And we missed it because how it was not in this part of the story. We missed a great line from him in that final scene where Paul's, I don't remember the exact words, but Paul says, I'm my father's son. And then how it says, to me, you look more like your grandfather. And that establishes that he's not actually the hero here. He's tragically flawed, and he's you know, just as much a Harkonnen as he is a
Atreides.
Atreides. So I think we reestablished that by having him kill the Baron. And I think that was a valuable story device there in the absence of Howitt pointing that out.
Yeah, because I think the Emperor says at one point that that Leto was too kind-hearted. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
you know, Paul is less kind-hearted. He's yeah. more... He's more analytical because partly because, as we know from the book and a little bit maybe from the first movie, he got that Mentat training from Thufir. But I think I have to say I obviously it I didn't want them to, like, you know, Leto dies at the end of the first movie, but I do miss having Oscar Isaac. He is probably the most sympathetic character, you know, among the Atreides. And this brings me to another point. What did you guys think? And maybe Matt, we'll have you answer first. What did you guys think of how they handled the Lady Jessica in the movie compared to the book?
In regards to what?
How much more she was being like a puppet master to Paul and scheming and trying mm-hmm. to, they made her much less sympathetic, I thought.
I was going to say that she was a lot less sympathetic and a lot more scheming and plotting and like thrusting Paul upon this messiah, where he in the movie seems to be backing away from it even harder than he did in the book. I don't know. Like, I really am having a problem with not having the time jump, because for the Fremen to really make the accomplishments that they made, it wouldn't happen in the few months before Jessica gives birth. That was probably why I had the most problem with in the movie.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that we didn't get that. I don't miss the fact that we didn't get baby Leto.
Oh yeah, that was an omission I was fine with.
I was perfectly fine with that not being part of it, because there was no point. We discussed this in the book podcast. Yeah. So the omission of that was great, but
that little bastard Leto was not worth anything.
No, definitely the time jump made more sense, giving Paul the opportunity to establish himself. I agree with you on that one, Matt. I did like how Lady Jessica felt more like a true Bene Gesserit in this, where she was very cunning and manipulative. And I thought this was more true to what I understood the Bene Gesserit to be. Like the other Bene Gesserits we see, like, what is it? Gaius Helen Mohiam, Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam. She's an extremely manipulative character. And that is kind of the starting point for the Bene Gesserit. And then Jessica didn't seem to fit that, because she seemed to be clouded by being the mother of Paul. Like that seems to be her priority, which is understandable if that's the way you want to take the character, but it didn't make sense within the whole Bene Gesserit objective. So I thought they did a good job with that. I liked the way they did Lady Jessica in this one.
I didn't like the fact that she went full Post Malone with all the face tattoos.
that was a bit much, but
yeah.
I just think her manner was so different from the first movie. She was, you could just really feel her fear and pain when it came to her family and the Duke and all that stuff.
And she was more motherly and more, concubinely. She was more
concubinous. I don't
know. You know what I'm saying. She was more, but in the second one, it was more authoritative and like, this is what we're doing. This is, you know.
I think that was my biggest objection, is the tone of her character changed dramatically. And you could just say, well, she had the Water of Life and all the memories of all the past, you know. I'm not saying it doesn't make any sense. I just, you know, I liked her characterization. I liked the character more in the first movie. In this one, she just felt like she was just trying to drive the plot forward to get Paul to take the step he needed to take. And that was most of what she did in the film. Although I have to say, it was really cool when the scene that I really liked that involved her was where she went and that woman caught the juvenile sandworm and like extracted the Water of Life. That was just a really cool scene.
It was
very interesting.
Mm-hmm. How did you guys feel about the Lady Fenring scene with with Mr. Fade Ralpha.
Ralpha. King Ralpha.
And the Gam Jabbar and the whole seductress stuff.
Well, I love Lea Seydoux and whatever she does. But that was I don't know that I needed the whole seduction like sequence necessarily, but it was fine. It was fine.
It felt just so out of place, even having just, you know, knowing what's going on in the background from reading the book. It still felt really out of place for me just because it was like, so there was nothing else referencing her or anything else in the story until boom, all of a sudden she's there and she's planning. And it's just like, what, you know, what did you think, Dave?
This goes back to the manipulation of the Bene Gesserit that I was talking about earlier, where they are extremely powerful. I mean, we had just spent 20 minutes in the full glory of Fade Ralpha, right? And his presence and ability to manipulate the situation on the battlefield and all that, and his nearly seemingly indestructible nature, right? And then this small woman comes and completely dominates him, gets exactly what she wants from him without opposition. And I think it was more a story about more to enforce the Bene Gesserit storyline than anything else, because they wanted his bloodline to continue, and they were going to do, and she was going to do whatever it took to get to make that happen. So I liked the scene.
Well, I'll say I liked the tweaking of the whole Fenring situation to emphasize the devious, calculating nature of the Bene Gesserit more than the tweaking of the Lady Jessica character.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
How did you guys feel about the sandworm speed and the worm riding and stuff?
It looked amazing.
It looked amazing. It was very cool. And if I can put reality out of the situation, it is super cool and I loved it. And this goes back to the moment I learned that it was a bus, that's when I had a problem. Yeah. with the riding of the sandworm. It's like, I get how the driver gets on.
Yeah.
How does everybody else get on? This thing's going like 40 miles an hour and doesn't stop.
Especially
aside, I absolutely loved it.
You want to know what the most unrealistic moment in the movie was? When Chani and Paul were sitting on a sand dune and Stilgar is going across, and Paul's like, "Hey, Stilgar," and he's like, "Hey, what's up, man?" But he's like riding a sandworm. Yeah, I was like, "What the fuck? How can you possibly hear?" Yeah,
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, everything about the sandworms is problematic. Yeah. So you just have to suspend your disbelief and just enjoy it.
I will say they did a great job of. When Paul rode the big grandfather worm for the first time, of like cinematically explaining how it all worked by like having the little like breathing holes, and he kept having to readjust and pull back on the ridges to you know, like I feel like, I mean, I know how it works from the book, but I feel like you can understand what was happening just visually instead of having a ton of explanation from Stilgar. Also, speaking of Stilgar. Well, that was bonkers. He was hilarious and just like out of his mind that entire movie. I don't know that I've ever seen an actor have more fun in a serious movie.
Oh my goodness. Than
Javier Bardem. That was amazing.
Yeah. He was so good. Lisa Nagaib.
Well, that is what the Lisa Nagaib would say. You could not say that he is the leader. That would not make any sense. Oh, yeah. Just cracked me up.
It was perfect. And how he was like trying, you know, he was definitely one of the believer class. Yeah. And he was trying to convince himself constantly that this is what was going on.
Yes. Finding facts to support your...
Yes, fitting the facts around your worldview. Anything else you guys wanted to mention about the movie? Did you all like it? What did you think?
I did like it. It would get a watch it period for me.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I loved the visuals and the sound and the music. Yes. I was a little bit taken aback by some of the story options or story decision make that was made. And I really kind of wish that I could have watched this having not just read the book, because I my expectations were high with things like the Aaliyah stuff. Yeah. I was like, I want to see Anya Taylor-Joy.
You need to see the midget abomination.
Stellan Skarsgård in the neck with her Gamja Bar. And then when that didn't happen, I was very disappointed. But that's, you know, that's the way things go. But I think overall it was a fun experience. I was glad that I saw it in the theater.
All the decisions made sense to me that they made the changes, like when I think it through. But considering how faithful the first movie was to the book, this one definitely took a few. I mean, maybe necessary. I don't know. I guess, you know, Zach would argue that they could have done worked harder, you know, I suppose. But I thought it was very good. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot funnier than the first movie. And it was just kind of bonkers. Like, it was all over the place. And
it was bonkers.
I mean, the book is too, to be fair. But seeing it visually and the visuals, that's the thing that Denis Villeneuve does the best. He just is his ability to represent scale and vastness. He's just really, really good. So it was great fun to watch. Yeah, I think it's really good. Matt, did you say what you thought of it?
I did. I do have two questions, though, real quick. One, did I miss it? Where is it? Raban, the cousin of Fade?
He's Fade's brother, I think.
Did I miss it when...
In the movie, at least.
When they were limiting his troops? Or did they just not mention that?
Explicitly said that.
Because I feel like that would have been important.
They elided the whole, this is the plan, we'll send Raban and he'll be a real dick, and then we'll send in Fade Rautha, who will seem, you know, like that whole plan. Basically, they explained it as the Baron was like, hey, I need money. That was expensive. Go crank up a bunch of spice so I get money. And they didn't have any of the sort of background ideas. There was less like devious plotting, or less detailed devious plotting in the movie than the book, for sure.
Yeah, I felt like that was a really simple thing to throw in, and they just kind of dropped it.
I really liked Fade Rautha's performance, Butler. It seemed like he was kind of trying to mimic Stellan Skarsgård was doing with
his voice,
with
for sure.
Yeah, with the voice, and I thought that was cool. Whether it was sort of like a homogenous part of, you know, the family, or if it was just the Na Baron trying to act more like the Baron to get his favor, you know.
Yeah, and Stellan's, I don't know how you say his name, but
he did
a phenomenal job as the Baron too. I loved his role.
Okay, I remember my other thing. The Sardaukar did not seem like a threat at all.
No,
kind of true in the book too, though.
Sardaukar are only a threat in name, like the Sardaukar. But then,
Fremen are
always better.
The Fremen
can kill 100 of them for 3, and then, but the Atreides wish they could train the Fremen to be even better than they are, because apparently the Atreides are better than the Fremen. It's like,
you think you're better than me?
No, exactly. I think what the Atreides offered the Fremen was insight into how their enemy thinks.
Yes, I think that's what Paul says at one point. He says, our family's been fighting for generations. You know, I know how they think. I can offer that in that, but you guys know how to fight in this world. So I think that was okay. But I agree, Matt. The Sardaukar in the book, they're a little. They seem a little more important, or a little more of a threat. In this movie, you know, they basically do nothing. They just get kind of trimmed down to guys that are defending the Emperor who just disappear in a cloud of dust.
Yeah, you know? They just stand there as rocks fall on them and sandworms eat them.
Yeah, I miss the throat singing. I wish we could have gotten more of that.
I think we need the Zach cut where you just kind of throat sing over the whole movie.
Yes. My commentary.
Yeah. So tell us what you think of Dune in the comments. Like and subscribe if you do that kind of thing. If you want more content like this, you can find everything we've done at 64tacos.com. And if you really liked it, go to buymeacoffee.com/64tacos, where you can buy us a taco. Thanks for listening.
I caught it on audio.
'Zach, why don't you give us a little synopsis of what happens in the movie today?
So we start off with Paul and his mother, and it's actually, I think it starts right where the first one ended, right?
Yeah.
Because they're still moving Jameis's body. If I remember correctly, that's the one that was all mummified and wrapped up and stuff. So they're moving that back to the whatever Siege that they're going to, which I think it's supposed to be Siege Tabor. Is that mm-hmm. the one?
I think so. Yeah.
So they're heading there. They get there. They do some stuff. And then let's see. Then the water, Jessica drinks the water of life, right? And mm-hmm. that affects her unborn child. And then let's see what comes next. Maybe someone who just like, I watched it like 2 weeks ago. So yeah. Maybe someone who just watched it would be a little bit better at like summarizing the,
I don't know. It's a tough one to summarize because so much stuff happens. Like to get it in the right order. Matt, do you want to crack at it?
I'll take a crack at it. So
this is going to be fun to edit.
Yeah.
Yeah.